Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very first day of September, Anno Domini 2018. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And let me start off by saying, if those of you who go to the Soundbites webpage at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. You will discover under our longevity that we're coming up on our 29th anniversary. Just a couple of more days, and we will have been here for 29 years, hurtling headlong into our 30th year on the air.
What is that in hex?
It's a hex of a lot.
Yeah. So FF would be 3-2, so 3-0 is FH.
There you go. There we are.
It's a computer show, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. On Thursday, Microsoft announced that they will drop the device limit on their consumer-grade Office 365 subscriptions and increase the number of users allowed under a single Office 365 home plan. Starting October 2, subscribers can... starting October 2nd, subscribers can install Office on an unlimited number of devices. Under current rules, Office 365 Home, which costs $100 per year, allows for installation of the suite's applications, Word, Outlook, Excel, and the rest, on only 10 devices, which is an allowance of 2 devices for each of only 5 users. So it's 10 devices, but 5 users. So each user can have 2 devices. So if you have a desktop and a laptop. Meanwhile, Office 365 Personal, which is a $70 annual plan, has rights for just one individual, capping the device count at 2 total. So one person, 2 devices. Those device limitations will disappear in little more than a month. The only restriction will be that each user can be signed into their account on a maximum of 5 devices simultaneously. Also changing is the 5-user rule for Office 365 Home. Beginning October 2nd, that subscription plan will license up to 6 users because each user receives their own 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage space. The total space allocated for a single home subscription will climb to 6 terabytes. Office 365 Home and Office 365 Personal are designed solely for consumers. The rights extended to subscribers, for instance, do not allow the applications to be used to generate content, documents, spreadsheets, presentation, and the like for business purposes. So pay attention. If you buy this $100 a year thing, you cannot use it for business. You cannot use it for business. The service software may not be used for commercial, nonprofit, or revenue-generating activities, Microsoft's licensing agreement states, so you can't even use it for a home business. The October 2 start for the home and personal plans changes, the home and personal plan changes have may have added significance. Microsoft has said it will release the next perpetual versions of the suite, the bundles that are purchased with a one-time payment, in the second half of this year, but has not disclosed a definite date. While the applications included with Office 365 are different, they typically contain more features than those offered as part of a perpetual license. The elimination of device limitations and the addition of the 6-user to Home may signal that early October will be the launch timetable for Office 2019 for Windows and Mac OS. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, and again, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft unlimited users of Office 365 for $100 a year? Your choices are, can't wait. That might be nice. Is that every year? What happens if I stop paying? And I'll stick with Google One or iCloud, thanks. So far, beg your pardon, so far, we have 32 people who have voted, and 59% of you are sticking with Google One or iCloud. But we know you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the link to the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 1 September 18. Microsoft, unlimited users of Office 365 for $100 a year.
Like we were saying before,
And when you're done with that,
oh, I'm sorry.
Please come back, and you can always give us a call at 5. Gotta get the phone numbers in.
Yeah.
585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Like we were talking before, you know, it's the 80-20 rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and what we're talking about, folks, is Microsoft basically is just grasping at straws. They're hurting for revenue, so they're trying to find other ways to be creative in getting your dollars because they're fighting against Google Docs. And the 80-20 rule is 80% of the folks out there could use Google Docs and does everything that Office 365 does for you. Like Nick was saying, though, the only thing maybe lacking here or there is a font or that.
Right.
But if you're just typing up a letter to send off to this person or doing a simple spreadsheet, fonts in that aren't going to be the big deal.
Right.
Now, if you're doing a presentation, yeah, then maybe it is. But how many home users are doing presentation? All right, family, we're discussing tonight's budget.
Well, sadly, more than you might think. But
and the big difference between home and business, and so business is $8.25 a month, which is $99 a year, so it's the same price. Home and business adds Outlook and Access. And the vast majority of people don't need either.
Yeah.
And right now, business still works on 5 phones, 5 tablets, and 5 PCs.
They're making their money off of business, so they're not going to change that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we sell the home and student version mostly to our customers because they don't need Outlook and they don't need Access. And you, for now, at least, you can still get... If I can get back to that right page, you can still get the perpetual license version, which is $150, and you pay once, and that's all. You never pay again.
Right.
There are rumors. They're increased.
But that's how many people is that?
One.
Right.
Right. So if it's just you, fine. If you have you know two people, then you want to get you probably need two licenses. Now you're at $300, so that's 3 years of the subscription. Because the subscription's $100 a year. If you want to put it on your tablet or your phone, then you have to buy the subscription.
Right.
Because the standalone products are only Mac or Windows. So, and that's probably why they're changing these licensing deals, is people have computers, laptops, tablets, phones. So it's not unusual for one person to have 4 or 5 devices.
Right. And the alternatives are... it's not iWork anymore. What is it now?
iCloud Documents. They don't Pages, Keynote, Numbers. They stopped using the iWork family brand name.
Okay,
but so we all still do because that's what we remember.
Right. So it's just the products under
their
Apple.
Own names. Yeah.
And also as we said, the Google Suite, Google One now, I think they call it, and of course. Yeah, Google One, and also, of course, LibreOffice, or if you prefer OpenOffice, although LibreOffice is newer and has more features than OpenOffice, which hasn't been updated in a while. So LibreOffice is, again, all the same stuff. It lives on your computer, so if you're one of those people who doesn't want to put anything in the cloud, LibreOffice works for you. And, of course, it's free. And again, you know, as I said earlier, the 80-20 rule, although it's more like the 99-1 rule, it does about 99% of what Office does. And I used it for 20 years at RIT, and I don't think anybody even knew it. Is there a statute of limitations? Am I good now? I can talk about this. And I shared documents with faculty and students left and right for decades. Nobody ever knew I wasn't on Microsoft Office. And the only problem I ever had was once in a while I didn't have the font they used.
Build a bridge, get over that one.
Exactly. So You know, there are a lot of alternatives that will save you $100 a year. The big difference is if you're actually used to Microsoft Office, you have to spend a little bit of time learning something else.
Yeah, if you've memorized all those Excel commands.
Right. Most of them are the same, but not all of them. And so you have to do a little bit of relearning. And if it's not worth $100 a year for you to relearn stuff, well, that's
then
fine.
Pay
that's,
the $100.
That's your
yeah.
thing. That's
yeah.
your thing. I get that.
We've run into a lot of people who have upgraded their computers. And you know, people tend to keep their computers quite long these days. So, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. They buy a new computer and suddenly realize their Office, you know, 2000 or 2004 doesn't work on a 2018 computer. So now right. you're forced to buy the new version. So we talk to people about, there's the free alternatives. No, I want Microsoft Office. Okay. You're going to have to learn a completely new interface anyway.
Right.
Why don't you try the free version first?
Mm-hmm.
You can come back and buy the other one later if you really, really need to. But
right. I mean, the reality is that it's, how many times am I going to have to say this? It's like buying a new car. You already know how to drive. You just don't know where the radio is.
Or the gas cap fillers on the other side.
Gas cap fillers on the other side. Well, that's why there's a little arrow in your your engine thing, in your gas gauge. But the fact is that it takes a few days to learn the new interface, and then you're done. And I don't know why more people don't do it. And I'll tell you, I love the fact. I have had LibreOffice since it first came out, and I love it. But I mostly use Google's OneDrive, Google One. Now, the stuff on, you know, Google Docs and Google Sheets and blah, blah, blah. Because it's available everywhere. Every desktop, every laptop, every Chromebook, every phone, every tablet. I can get it everything, anywhere, anytime, and use it. It works out pretty nicely.
I started on AppleWorks.
Uh-huh. I started on WordPerfect.
Yep.
Actually, I started on Mince and Scribble. Go ahead and look them up.
Yeah.
But I love Mince and Scribble. And then I avoided LaTeX and went right to WordPerfect. All right, let's get to the phones. Our first caller is Smiley from Rochester, New York. Hi, Smiley. What's up?
Well, on the form under Apple
yeah.
or Mac, I'm not real geeky on Macs and that, but Steve can correct it if it's wrong. I think the guy was trying to use his 1Password, and with a Mac on the different things like your cloud, your root, your user, and other things, you have to have a different password, and that's what I put on there. And I don't know if that would straighten the guy out or not. Steve can probably read the thing over and maybe make the correction for the answer that I put in on here.
On the newer operating systems, you can use your iCloud password as your computer password. They have sort of unified that, and it lets you if you forget your iCloud password, you can use your computer to change it. Or if you forget your computer password, you can use your iCloud password to change it. So they're trying to help you reset passwords when you forget them by linking them together. But I haven't seen that form yet. I'm logging in there now to look at it.
Yeah,
the
person's actually on an iMac with High Sierra, and it seems both FaceTime and iMessage cannot connect to our Apple ID and password. Not sure why. In an iMessage, it shows inactive. Putting in the ID and password, we get an error occurred during activation. Try again. He can log into Apple with the ID and password fine, can log into the App Store, but these two items refuse to activate, and I cannot figure out why. Even rebooting solves nothing.
Yeah, often you turn them off, reboot, and then try turning them on. Sign out of iCloud in your system preferences, and then sign back in.
Oh, you could have a bad token sitting somewhere.
Yeah, this is an issue that we have seen in some cases.
So then my answer was wrong then.
Well, it was not as accurate as it could be. Got to take a quick break.
Okay,
thanks, Smiley.
I'll let you guys go.
Yep, thanks, Smiley. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites member supported Jazz 9.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
problems? Get answers from the experts. Soundbites, noon to two Saturdays, only on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. We were a little abrupt with Smiley at the end of the last segment, but I do want to thank him for getting in there and answering that question. We love it when our listeners get in there and answer questions for us. So thank you for that. So, Windows 10 on Chromebooks, at first, it sounds downright stupid. You can already do just about everything on a Chromebook with Chrome OS, including run tons of Windows apps. The eagle-eyed developers at XDA Developers have spotted a new Google Pixelbook firmware branch. The new code, Eve Campfire, includes a new Alt-OS mode. That Alt-OS, Windows 10. From the clues XDA has picked up, this looks to be a real offering and not just an internal product that will never see the light of day. XDA thinks there'll be a built-in dual boot option such as Apple's Boot Camp. Windows on a Chromebook wouldn't be for everyone. You'd need a well-equipped Chromebook with at least 40 gigs of internal storage. You can also forget about running Windows 10 on an ARM-based Chromebook. But why would Google bring Windows to Chromebook? Some people have suggested it's because Chrome OS can't compete with Windows. Oh, please. People run Windows for three reasons these days. One, it's all they've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
Two, their favorite game runs on it. Or three, they have one mission-critical app that only runs on Windows. Not only do Chromebooks run apps, but they run more apps without dual or multi-booting than any other computing platform. Let me repeat that sentence for you. Not only do Chromebooks run apps, but they run more apps without dual or multi-booting than any other computing platform. That's because you can run Android, Linux, and many Windows applications on a Chromebook simultaneously. Chromebooks have become all-purpose, do-everything productivity machines. Gartner and IDC both agree that the PC market is finally growing again, and Chromebooks get much of the credit for this. Personally, I gave up laptops for high-end Chromebooks years ago. They work great, and if one were to go haywire while I was traveling, all I need to do to get another is get another one, enter my Google password, and I'm back in business in a minute with all of my documents and applications. Just try that with any other kind of laptop. So why offer Windows on the Chromebook? It's likely two things. One, Google wants to snag all those users who are still stuck on Windows because of a favored game or required application. Two, and this is so sneaky of Google, I hope it's true, Windows 10 will run like a dog on Chromebooks. Even slow Chromebooks are fast compared to Windows and Mac OS laptops. And did you see Google's latest Chromebook ad? It's all about how Chromebooks are faster and much more reliable than its competitors' machines. So would Google rub Microsoft's face in just how much better Chromebooks are than Windows laptops by letting users see it for themselves? Sure it would in a hot New York minute. So Chromebook, Windows, Mac, Linux, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I updated my desktop finally. After so many years of being burned by Windows updates, and even though I've been using Linux for two decades, I still get leery, and mm-hmm. so I constantly put off updating my desktop.
Yeah.
But I finally upgraded to 18.04, which came out in April, which is a long-term support version, so I just get 2 years of support from that one. And I finally did it yesterday, and then I rebooted, which I do like three times a year. And I rebooted, and it took forever. Now, objectively, it only took about a minute and a half.
But that feels forever.
But generally, my Chromebooks boot up in 8 seconds.
So that was forever.
It was forever. And I kept thinking, oh, man, it's ruined. It's ruined. And then all of a sudden, it came up, and I went, oh yeah, it's just a regular operating system.
We get spoiled, you know. It's just like going back, you know, the internet when we first did modems, dial-up service, you know, to where now we've got, you know, say Spectrum and Greenlight and all these others. You just click on it, boom, it's there.
Well, that was the other thing, of course. I'm on Greenlight. So when I started the upgrade, it said, oh, we have to download 7 terabytes of data, 76 billion apps, whatever the number was.
Yeah.
And it said, this may take up to 10 hours, depending on how fast your internet connection was.
Puff.
2 minutes later, everything was downloaded and it was beginning to work.
We hate you.
So thank you. I appreciate that. I told my wife, if we ever move, number one on the list is it better have the new house better be in a green light
district neighborhood. Yeah.
That's number one. Number two is two-car garage, but number one is green light.
What does that matter? You don't park in your garage now as it is.
I want a garage I can park in.
Yeah, so two-car garage, she gets to park in it, and the other side is full of junk. So you need a three-car garage.
Well, that's sadly true.
That's the way it works.
We could do the garage now that we have a new roof on it. The old roof was more of a roof suggestion, let's just say. But now we could do something with it, but we haven't. Anyway, we should probably go back to the phones and stop this nonsense. Our next caller is not there.
Sorry. Call back. We finally got to you.
Please call back. I do apologize. We'll get right back to you in just a moment.
I think he's on the other line now.
Is that the same guy?
Dave frantically pushes buttons.
Okay. Our next caller.
That's a modem.
Is a modem.
All right, squeal back at it. Boingy, boingy, boing. Sorry about that.
I don't know.
Yeah,
what
try that again because we switched them over and that's what we got was
and
a
we
modem.
Got a modem? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Try again, Paul, but you had a modem sound there once we switched you over.
Didn't you say you knew a guy that could squeal back at the right time and make the connection?
Yes, he had perfect pitch, and so consequently, we used to work at a place called the Computer Center, and so they would, of course, people would call up with their modems back in the 70s and early 80s, and try to connect to a network computer, and. And we had a guy who had perfect pitch. And so because each of the modem speeds, 300, 1200, 2400, had a different sound, had a different frequency. And so he would whistle back in the correct frequency to make a connection. And then he'd go, and hang up and say, I wonder what I said.
Yeah.
All right, maybe back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ray, what's up?
Got a question. I have an iMac with everything updated, version level wise, software wise. For some reason, I get an issue either with the messaging tool or the Facebook tool where it will not authenticate the password and the ID. Although everything else works with the password ID, I could log on to Apple and use the ID.
But you put this in the forum, didn't you? You put this in the forum, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yep. Yeah, we were talking to Smiley about that a couple of minutes ago. And
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
No, that's okay. It's I can't believe you're not listening constantly, even when we're not on. But Steve may have an answer for you.
This is not an unknown problem. That can sometimes make you feel better, at least. Usually what you need to do is sign out of iCloud completely in your system preferences and then reboot and sign back in. And I've posted an Apple Tech Note in that forum page as well. Sometimes you get FaceTime and not iMessage. Sometimes you get iMessage and not FaceTime. So it's weird. So FaceTime is audio and video, and iMessage is text. So we wonder why they separated them.
But the basic problem is a bad token somewhere, and only by signing out do you lose that token.
And when you sign back in, you get a new security token based on your password and the current time and date and everything else that generates those tokens.
So even though, I shut the machine off or reboot it, and it says, put in your ID, which I do, because it wants to go to the App Store or whatever it wants to do.
Right, but when
that's solving the issue.
That just refreshes the current password.
Right.
By signing out, it will remove all of the old tokens and then sign in.
Yeah, rebooting doesn't actually change the tokens on your machine.
Okay.
One of the quick things to check is make sure your time zone is set right.
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, because if your time zone is wrong and you're trying to log into to Apple and it sees your time zone set wrong based on what your clock and their clock, that can mess up the token, basically messing up the tokens between them, which are time-based.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Sometimes we've even seen it be as necessary to sign out of iCloud on all your devices, your phone and your tablet and your computer.
Wow.
And then sign all the way back in again. It almost feels like it's an issue if nope, it's the same modem again.
Now we're getting modem again, Paul. Give it up.
Maybe his fax machine is on his voice line.
Yeah, it might be.
We sometimes feel like the longer you've had your Apple ID.
He was hearing the same thing.
Oh.
So I don't know.
It's at your end, though, Paul. Sorry.
Because the last call worked okay.
Yeah.
Since Apple created the Apple IDs, 12, 15 years ago when the iTunes Store first came out, if you have had one that long, then Apple's gone through so many upgrades and changes in their process from iTunes to .Mac to Mobile Me, now to iCloud. It just feels like there's some cruft left over.
Yeah.
And if you've had an Apple ID for a very long time, if you had an Apple ID from before they called it an Apple ID, it was just your iTunes ID back then.
Right.
That could be an issue.
Right.
Well, we can try one more time.
We do have, it's a very weird thing. I mean, this is the way all security systems work. Mm-hmm. You get a token based on the time and the date and a bunch of other information, your password, yada, yada, yada. And that rarely, but it can get out of sync from one end to the other, and not necessarily universally. So as Ray was having a problem, it still worked fine with some things and didn't work fine with others.
Mm-hmm.
And all you can really do is, as Steve said, log out of everything, make sure everything is logged off, reboot everything so those tokens literally go away, and then sign back in again.
Yep. And the iTunes music store was launched April 2003.
Wow.
That was a very long time ago for the first legally downloadable music.
Right. My daughter had an iPod, and I told her I would buy her a song a week.
It was 99 cents a song.
99 cents a song. I would buy her one song a week, and if I caught her with pirated music, she was going to lose that thing. She mm-hmm. was like, what? What year is that?
2003.
So she was 11. And so I told her, this is we're not going to play this game. It's
200,000 songs available.
Wow. and she downloaded, she bought most mm-hmm. of them, but she used her allowance, and I bought her a song a week. And then one day she came to me and said, Dad, if I don't buy a song for, what is it, 15 weeks, can I buy an album? I said, sure. It's the same amount of money. I don't care how you spend it.
It actually was a little cheaper to buy an album.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever.
If,
it was.
If there were more than 10 songs on the album, right, then it was cheaper.
Right. $9.99 an album. Yeah. That was it. Right.
Yeah, I tried again with him, but he's got dial-up service, and it's given us a problem. Paul, if you want, you can always text us your question at 585-209-9010, and we can answer it there. That might be simpler. But he's tried to...
So his modem keeps grabbing the phone
line. Yeah, the modem keeps grabbing the phone line, and that's why we're hearing, you know.
There we go.
Dial-up service.
Old school.
Yeah.
Very old school. Very cool.
Yeah. Or email us your question. You can do any one of us.
That won't be in as fast, though.
Right.
Texting will come to the screen in front of Dave.
Yeah.
Well, one of the, what, seven screens in front of Dave?
Yeah, right. Dave's on the Enterprise Bridge at the moment. Screens galore.
There. One, two, five screens.
Five okay. screens, there you go. None of which have any relevant information to us, but due to him, because he's looking at meters and stuff.
Trying to keep things in control.
Yeah, trying.
That's what I said, trying.
In this show, it's not that
easy. I didn't always say it works.
Right. All right, back to the news.
Rob's probably not listening to us anyways.
Yeah, he's probably on vacation somewhere.
Yeah, out in his boat or something.
Yeah. Apple is expected to take the covers off its latest range of smartphones in the iPhone 2018 lineup next month. With just a few weeks to go before the anticipated iPhone refresh, users are reporting an upcoming promotional offer from the tech giant promising 200 gigabytes of free iCloud storage for a period of 2 months. It's not. Well, this offer is expected to be made available exclusively in the U.S. for customers of one of the top four wireless operators, AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and Sprint. Additionally, it appears to be valid only for new customers and not the ones who are already availing themselves of iCloud's premium subscription. You know, the loyal customers. Reddit thread has emerged last week, claims the presence of this unannounced development from Apple. The offer is said to be available only for a limited period of time, and users will be charged a regular $3 per month after the two-month window ends. So basically, it's a $6 deal. Yippee.
And September 14th is the date we'll know.
And September 14th is the date we'll know.
Yep. 12th is the announcement, so 14th maybe you'll be available then.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with the entire rest of this story. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Let me redo some of this story and then get back into it. Apple is expected to take the covers off its latest range of smartphones in the iPhone 2018 lineup next month. There's going to be a promotional offer for 200 gigabytes of free iCloud storage for a period of 2 months, but not if you're a current customer, because loyalty means nothing to any of these people. After the 2 months, it'll be a $3 a month charge. So basically, that's a $6 deal. Apple has not yet officially confirmed the presence of such an offer and might do so around the time of the 2018 iPhone launch, giving users an extra reason to consider picking one up for one of the three rumored variants. Apple currently offers 5 gigabytes of free iCloud storage, whoopee, as a default for all of its device owners. The base paid plan with 50 gigabytes of storage bears a price tag of $1. The one with 2 gigabytes costs $3, and the top end 2 terabytes of storage sports a price tag of $10. This is per month. Back in May this year, Apple had introduced free 1 month iCloud storage trials for all three of its offerings in an attempt to boost cloud storage adoption for its customers. Notably, first taste is free, people. Notably, the plans automatically renew after the 30-day window ends, so users will have to manually discontinue it from their end or pay the monthly fees for the selected storage plan. So, are you looking forward to that sweet, sweet $6 saving? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
We were actually talking with a customer this morning that was sending their iPhone 7 in for service, and they were wondering, you know, should I upgrade to an 8? No! Wait 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
See what the new announcement is. Because if you want to upgrade to an 8, the price will probably go down.
Right.
And there'll be a 9 by then.
Right.
Or maybe an 8S. So we don't know if it's going to be a 9 or an 8S and then a 10S or 10XL we don't know. But it's coming. We know it's coming. That's all we know.
Right. And let me just say maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but when you're looking for a company to do business with, look for a company that tells you wait because something better is coming, or that tells you try the free thing first, because it's probably a more honest company to work with.
Yep.
And so that's the way you should do those things. That's the way I did it when I did retail.
Apple has kind of gotten out of the habit of predicted releases.
Right.
So right now, September for new phones is about the only predicted release. There's such a history of them doing it that you almost have to expect it. But there used to be seasons where you knew in spring there was a new iPad coming, you know, in summer there was a new Mac coming. They've sort of gotten away from that, partly because they don't want people to stop buying them before the new one comes out.
Well, but equally, it used to be you had new things in August for back to school.
Well, and that's actually too late for schools. You need a new thing in
June.
They
jump into the holiday
season.
In
July, but now they come out in October, so they're clearly for
Christmas
holiday, right.
Well, and what's kind of interesting is on the back to school deals, when it has happened, when there's been an announcement, say in September, for a new computer,
right,
those computers are usually not included in the back to school deals that end at the end of August before school starts.
Right. It's pretty.
So like most companies, they want to clear out the old inventory before the new comes. Although at our store, we like buying the old inventory because it's cheaper.
Right.
So you can save, you know, maybe $100, maybe $200 on a Mac And it's we call them yesterday's model, because yesterday it was the new model.
Right.
Yeah.
And we always get a kick out of it when it literally was yesterday. This was the new model. Now it's cheaper because there's a better model out. And average people don't need that, you know, 10% clock speed gain or
right.
whatever new thing they added. So save the $100. Put that toward the AppleCare. So when you drop it and break it, it can get covered by an incident fee.
Right.
Rather than
exactly.
Especially expensive. If you got devices, and that's why I always tell parents that with the kids, even the college kids, you know, yeah, get the protection plan for those, because kids don't always fully mm-hmm. when, you know, well, nothing happened, it'll sit on the desk. But yeah, if you quick grab that thing and take off with it, and oh, it's still hooked up to the power cord, and that gets ripped out. And now you can't hook it back up to charge it because that's been broken.
One of the things we found at our store is that the carrier insurance, so if you buy your phone at a carrier store, the carrier wants to sell you insurance. The carrier insurance typically costs more than the AppleCare, you know, manufacturer plan that
right.
that we sell. And the incident fees are typically a little more. So like with Apple, if you break your screen, it's $29. With some of the other carriers, it might be $79 for a screen. We always like to tell our customers, because we don't sell the phones themselves, but we mm-hmm. sell all the accessories. You know, once you get your phone, come to us to buy the AppleCare, because it's cheaper and better in the long run than most of the carrier insurance. The only thing it doesn't cover is if you lose the phone completely. But there's the Find My iPhone service that helps you find that. So
you can find
if you've lost your phone.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, and you know, talking about things coming out in October, a lot of new Chromebooks come out in October, and I guess that is for Christmas,
the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Dell is bringing out a new fairly high end thing. It'll be about a $600 Chromebook, 14-inch, which is good for my eyes. It's a 2-in-1, so it flips over and becomes a tablet.
Cool.
It's got a 1920x1080 display, which is nice. It's 14 inches, like I said, which is good. It's going to have an 8th generation Core i3, 4 gig of RAM, and up to 128 gigs of onboard storage, which is important because if you're going to run Android apps, you want a little bit of storage space for that. Mm-hmm. Even 64 gig is a lot, more than the phones generally have. And it's going to have a 15-hour battery.
Nice.
Yeah, no kidding.
Nice.
So you certainly are going to get a day out of it.
Heck yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. It also comes with an EMR, an electromagnetic resonance stylus for drawing and note taking, which is stored in the Chromebook so you don't lose it, which is, you can get one for a Pixel, but it's $100 extra. I think that's going to be my next Chromebook. Starts at about $600. And that probably is only 64 gig additional storage.
Again, you can always hook up an external hard drive right. if you need that much more.
Right.
But just think, in a couple of years, we'll all be complaining that 15 hours isn't enough battery life.
Only 15 hours? Yeah, well, that's the thing that lags behind, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Everything else is up there, and we're really finding it now with electric cars. You know, the one problem holding back electric cars is range anxiety. You know, I don't get a lot of range out of my car, and it takes forever to recharge it. So if I'm going to drive cross country, I drive for 300 miles. I spend 5 minutes gassing up, and I drive another 300 miles.
You're going to start seeing them with solar panels on top of the hood.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But for just the running around town, they can right. be really good. In fact, we're starting to see an increase in electric bicycles.
Right,
especially bike sharing companies coming in with electric bikes for you know, inner city commuters.
What I really want is an electric Vespa.
We'll probably make them.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming to America. Yeah. Coming to America. Okay. Again in October.
I know a guy that's in Italy right now. Maybe he could sneak one over to you.
Yeah, no problem. I'll take that.
Dennis, if you're another Dennis.
Different Dennis. But yeah, it's going to enter. It's coming to America next in October. So that'll be kind of fun, and we'll see where that takes us. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry. No, it isn't.
Maybe it is our end.
Maybe it wasn't his end. Maybe it's something to do with our phone system screwing up again.
Then why did a couple other ones work fine?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. Sorry, Larry, don't know what's going on. Of the many things we don't know about phones is apparently one of them.
Try back and let's see what happens again.
Try it back, see what happens. Absolutely. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, Dell is launching their next Chromebook, and I'm ready for a new Chromebook. Chromebooks only have a 5 or 6 year life before they stop updating them. And when a Chromebook costs you $200, 5 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the next one brings me. Although, you know what? I was going to bring my actual Linux laptop this week because you can download and run an app that is Windows 95.
Okay, let's see.
You can run it on Windows, on a Mac, and on Linux. And I was going to bring it and run it.
They might have done that in like a VM. I have seen...
All right. I'm sorry.
Is Larry back?
Yeah, Larry might be back. Nope. No Larry. Don't know what's happening. Sorry. Do not know what's happening here. Sorry. Go ahead.
I've seen, Windows 95 in your browser. I've seen like Mac OS 7 running in a web browser.
Yeah.
So you can load all those games you grew up on.
Right.
So here's, I just found one that's Windows 95 recreated in your web browser.
Yeah, I've seen that one too. But this is actually Windows 95 as an app. I downloaded it for my Linux laptop. There it is. And it works also on Mac OS and on Windows. It's not perfect. It runs. I have played Minesweeper.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I couldn't make the web browser connect. Internet. It's the globe that says Internet. This was even before it was called Internet Explorer. It was just the Internet. But it boots up. It was hysterical.
It's only 129 megs.
So, and it's only 129 megs, and it made me laugh. The whole thing made me laugh. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. That's a modem.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely. We don't have a modem connected, do we? Anything, Steve? Are you running a modem of any sort? I don't have anything
don't
connected.
I don't have a modem either.
I don't know.
Crazy. There's an ISDN system here, I think.
Yeah, there is. I don't know. But I don't know.
That wouldn't use those types of tones, would they?
I don't think so, although I don't honestly know. Sorry, we don't know what to tell you. But Paint works, by the way, on this Windows 95 thing. You can run
Windows
Microsoft Paint. So that's important. Those of you who absolutely need your Microsoft Paint, it's there.
Microsoft Paint and Mac Paint probably sold a lot of computers in the early days.
Yeah, they really did.
Oh my gosh, I can draw on the screen. That was just one of those revolutionary things where you couldn't really do that before.
Well, the Macintosh, I remember showing people the Mac when it first came out, and just the ability to have multiple fonts, lousy as they were back then, the ability to actually see the fonts, WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get. You could get it on the Xerox Star, but the average individual had not seen it.
Yeah.
And in fact, I sold a lot of Macs back in the day because people would come in and say, "You mean I can have a star on my desk?" Mm-hmm. And I was very careful to point out, no. It doesn't have nearly the amount of RAM. It's not connected to anything in a network yet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The fonts are not the same. It doesn't have the power, et cetera, et cetera. But given all of that, then yes, you do have a Xerox Star on your desktop. So, as your desktop, and it was the beginning of a revolution. Now you look back at command line interfaces and you think, unless you're a Linux user, you think, seriously?
Okay. Learn a couple commands just to get by.
Yeah.
Although we ran into an issue in the Apple community where. Oh, still.
No, there's something not right.
Well, maybe leave it on the line but pot it down until it gives up connecting.
Yeah, there you are.
See what happens there. So Apple discontinued their server software GUI. to turn your Mac into a server. The Mac itself has personal file sharing built in, personal web sharing built in, but it's not designed for large usage.
Right.
But since it's Unix underneath, all that the services are still there.
Right.
So now you just use a command line to activate them. So a couple of people have already started working on GUI interfaces so you could access those services that are at the Mac command line.
Nice. Can you bring up a command line?
Yeah. To replace the Apple server OS.
Do you have NMCLI?
NMCLI?
Yeah.
Nope.
Nope. Okay. It's the Net Manager command line interface. You can bring up networks, bring down networks, do all the network stuff.
I've got netstat.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things you can do at a command line. Now, whether it's a Linux command line, a Windows command line, or a Mac command line that are just not readily available in other places.
I can make a calendar.
Yes, you can. You can type cal. You can also type cal with a date, I believe.
Yeah.
And do that. All right, listen, we're going to take a slightly longer break. Our first hour is over. But we have another hour, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a slightly longer break. Take your little bio break and then come back. We'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and we are right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You because we are indeed member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk. Can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Sound Bites. And it's right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we are indeed member supported Jazz 90.1.
Well, that was a different sound, so that was good.
That was the regular. That's a busy signal now.
Fast busy, yeah. So we'll see what happens with the next caller.
I don't know. We don't know what's going on with the phone lines at the moment. I apologize. Anybody's got a couple of $1 million sitting around who wants to put a new phone line in for us, we'll be happy to take that. In the meantime, I love this story. Ever wonder what the people on the other end of a Hangout session are really looking at on their screens? With a little help from machine learning, you might be able to take a peek over their shoulders based on research published at the Crypto 2018 conference in Santa Barbara last week. All you'll need to do is process the audio picked up by their microphones. Four researchers investigated a potential new avenue of remote surveillance that they have dubbed synesthesia, a side-channel attack that can reveal the contents of a remote screen, providing access to potentially sensitive information based solely on content-dependent acoustic leakage from the LCD screen.
Wow.
The research, funded in part by the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, no surprise there, examines what amounts to an acoustic form of Van Eck freaking. While Van Eck freaking uses radio wave emissions that leak from their display connectors, the synesthesia research leverages coil whine, the audio emissions from transformers and other electronic components powering a device's LCD display. This isn't the first acoustic side channel attack ever discovered by any means. Researchers previously demonstrated a way to use noise generated by a computer's power supply and other components to recover RSA encryption keys. And nation-state use of acoustic side channels have been documented, though not against computer screens. In former MI5 assistant director Peter Wright's book Spycatcher, which is a pretty interesting read, by the way, Wright recounted how British intelligence used a phone tap to record audio from an Egyptian embassy cipher machine during the Suez Crisis. And acoustic bugging has also been shown to reveal keystrokes on a physical keyboard. Anyone who remembers working with cathode ray tube monitors is familiar with the phenomenon of coil whine. Even though LCD screens consume a lot less power than the old CRT beasts, they still generate the same sort of noise, though in a totally different frequency range. Because of the way computer screens render a display, the power sent to each pixel fluctuates as the monitor goes through its refresh scans. Variations in the intensity of each pixel create fluctuations in the sound created by the screen's power supply, leaking information about the image being refreshed, information that can be processed with the machine learning algorithms to extract details about what's being displayed. That audio could be captured and recorded in a number of ways, as demonstrated by the researchers in this case, over a device's embedded microphone or an attached webcam microphone during a Skype, Google Hangouts, or other streaming audio chat, through recordings from a nearby device such as a Google Home or Amazon Echo, over a nearby smartphone, or from a parabolic microphone from distances up to 10 meters, which I believe is 3.6 kilograms per parsec in European. Even a reasonably cheap microphone could pick up and record the audio from a display, even though it is just on the edge of human hearing. As it turns out, that audio can be exploited with a little bit of machine learning black magic. It's definitely getting scarier out there. Maybe you could give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
You can call us, but that doesn't guarantee you'll get on the air.
Calling us is okay. getting through the thing. Maybe turn off the Comrex, see what happens. What the hell?
I think that's the thing that puts the phones on the air.
Oh, maybe it is. All right, forget that then. I don't know what to say. It's we're confused. We're confused, okay? We're confused.
We're computer guys, not phone guys.
That's exactly right. It's a very different and very specialized talent that we simply do not have.
So what was that text number again for people that want to text us?
Yeah, Dave, what's the text number?
I think he's texting Rob.
Oh, he's talking to Rob.
209-9010.
And in fact, that number is on our website at soundbites.org. There's three phone numbers in red over on the right. There's the 585-966-5299 number, the 1-800-790-0415 number. And you can text us at 585-209-9010. And, of course, that works from anywhere on Earth. And I don't believe there's any sort of distance charge for text messages. So no. Anybody
but
can text us.
Standard text messaging rates may apply.
Standard text messaging and text. Yeah, what Steve said.
It's not just the phones acting up today.
Yeah, it's not just the phones. I have allergies and my head is stuffed beyond belief. I'm having trouble talking. Clearly, I'm having trouble thinking. But there you are. It's a whole nother issue.
I think we're rebooting it.
Yeah, we're rebooting something. Dave's looking in the back now. I'm going to move my water. Dave's looking in the back. Which has a lid on it. I'm in a studio with a lot of electronics, and my water has a lid on it.
And when we're talking for...
And there's a text message from somebody, and that's empty, so it's okay. But yes, Dave just unplugged something. Okay. All righty then.
Have you unplugged and replugged it lately?
That's right.
A friend of mine just turned me on to a British TV show, IT Crowd.
Oh, yeah, the IT Crowd, sure. Richard Iowati.
And, the other guy that I knew from Graham Norton, that I can't think of his name offhand.
Yeah, pretty good stuff.
Sounds like and the whole first episode. Have you unplugged it and replugged it in?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we've got a phone call coming in. We'll see if it makes it.
Okay. We'll see if this one gets through.
Hold on. Let's try it.
Let's try it. See what happens.
Chris O'Dowd, that's the guy I knew.
Hello?
Hi, guys. This is Joel. I'm out walking at Pittsburgh with my cell phone. And I'm just calling to see if any calls could get through to you guys. Nothing particular in mind. Just wanted to run the test.
Well, thanks. We appreciate it.
That one worked.
And just one quick thing. Have you guys considered changing the name of your show to Chrome Bites? Okay, so your phones are working. Take care, guys. Thanks for all you do.
Thanks so much.
Yep,
yeah, we do sometimes get on a thing, and both Dave and I are Chromebook people, so we spend a lot of time talking about our Chromebooks. But the reality is you truly, you know, our job here is to help you find new ways to do the same stuff. And one of the ways to do that is with a product like a Chromebook. You can save an awful lot of, depending on what you do, you can save an awful lot of money by using a Chromebook. And it certainly becomes easier to do a number of things. So we're very big on Chromebooks because they work so well and so fast and so easily. Like I said, I just upgraded my Linux box to the latest long-term support version because I always wait. I always wait until at least the 0.1 is out.
Yeah.
And also, I'm so upgrade shy from too many years of Windows. And it went like a charm. But then, of course, I rebooted, which I don't do very often. And it took a minute to come up. And it scared me. It took a whole minute to come up. Because it wasn't a Chromebook. It was just a regular Linux machine with a regular hard drive and you know, all
did,
of that. So.
Did you check your uptime before you rebooted?
Yeah. Uptime, of course, is uptime means how long your machine's been running. But there are things that count. Like if it's planned for downtime, it doesn't count against uptime, right? But even so, you've taken your machine down, so the uptime counter in the machine reboots.
Mine only says 45 days.
Yeah. But we had a machine that that it rolls over after a certain number, and I don't remember what that number is. Probably 512
Wouldn't it be a 32-bit register?
No, well, but it wasn't. Back in the old days, it was probably an 8-bit register, so it probably was like 512 days, whatever. But we had to reboot one of the machines, and our Linux guy got very angry. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller probably is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
You got it. I'm stubborn.
Yeah, there you go. Works. Thanks, Larry.
I'm calling because I have... Sophos Home Premium on my computer, and lately the shield has been showing red, and when I looked at it, it says all my protection is off. When I go into the setup and look at it, everything that I have says that it's on and I'm fully protected and it's updated. I went to support on Sophos, but I can't seem to find anything that would explain why this happens, and of course it scares me that, you know, which one of these things is right. Do I really have protection? This is a mistake, or is it correct and I don't have protection? Just looking for help.
Yeah, are you on Windows or a Mac?
I have the Mac.
Yeah. It's quite possibly a problem with your preferences file.
Oh. Everything wants to give me a preference, but I guess I'll have to figure out how to do preferences for this.
Have you checked for updates lately? I know it updates itself, but it wouldn't hurt to try a manual update.
While I was trying to get through to you, that's exactly what I did. It says I'm updated. I thought, well, it has this little wheel that says, oh, you just refreshed yourself and you're updated. And so I went to look at an update itself and do it manually. It says I'm okay. But I guess that's something I suppose I could just go ahead and try that anyway.
Right. But I would under Sophos. Oh, is your on-access scanning disabled? But that wouldn't be red.
Normally it's black.
Yeah, there are two places you have preferences. One is in Sophos itself. And the other is in a folder called Preferences. Where is that?
So
in the user folder that's normally hidden.
User great.
Library.
Okay.
Well, that's the preferences file itself. I don't. There could be a system preference for Sophos as well as Sophos's own preference. I'm not running it on this computer.
Let's see.
you could try an uninstall and reinstall.
Okay. I thought about that, and I was a little afraid to do that, but...
Yeah, if it is true, then you probably want to do a full manual scan, just to be safe.
And I did a scan. I did it yesterday morning, and I just waited for it to do a complete full scan, and right now it says no threats found.
Yeah, so which one is right, is the...
That's what worries me. I don't want to be tooling around on here, and in fact, I don't have any protection. I have malware bytes, the premium version of that now, and it's always working, but I depend on both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. But so when you go into the system, it says everything is on, but that shield, that health shield, is red.
Right, it's red, and it says real-time protection is disabled, potentially unwanted app protection disabled, web protection disabled, malicious traffic protection disabled. But when I click on them and then go to my status, it says everything is all right, and then when I go into the individual statuses and look at them, the little button that turns it on or off says everything is in the on position. And I just did another scan this morning. It says, okay, you're fine. So, but I'm worried about this.
Yeah, you should be. Man, hold on. Don't go away. We have to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with Larry from Rochester, and with you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Still there,
yep.
Larry?
Still here.
Excellent. All right, Steve is going to tell you what we think we know.
A couple of things to try. Turn it off, reboot, turn it back on. Do you have...
Sophos, he means
Sophos itself, yeah.
Turn off Sophos itself, then reboot and turn it back on again.
When you say turn it off, you mean disable everything
or
just get out of it?
Yeah,
disable everything.
Go into the Sophos preferences and set everything to off.
Okay.
The other thing is, are you running System 1013?
Yes.
All right. When you install Sophos, because it installs itself at such a low level in the OS... One of Apple's system protections pops up, and you have to go to your system security panel and allow Sophos to activate. If you miss that step, then that can prevent Sophos from activating. I can post a...
Maybe you should try that first.
Well, I'm not sure if it happens every boot or only when you install it. Because if you install the kernel extension and you never allow it to run, does it try running again?
Right.
I don't know.
And can you just go in somewhere and turn it back on, or do you have to reinstall and wait for the prompt? But Steve is gonna post an article that explains all of this and how to handle it. So,
all right, I'll wait for that article. Yeah. That way I can kind of go point by point without trying to remember here.
Yep.
I have the latest. I always try to keep the latest updates and everything on the machine. I do notice something installed lately, and it did prompt me and say, hey, I can't get into it. And so I had to go into systems preferences and allow it to actually install.
That might have been it then. In the security preference,
right? System.
If you do an update, it may need to be re-enabled.
Yeah.
Right.
And if all else fails, it's uninstall, reboot, and reinstall.
Right. Okay. And the system's preferences again would be in security and privacy, right?
Right. Yeah. Near the bottom of that, there would be a setting that says allow whatever program, in this case Sophos,
right,
to run.
Okay. All right. right. I'll wait for your post, and then I'll get right on it, because I'm really a little skittish about even having this machine on right now and looking at things.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I have coverage.
I would almost say disconnect from the internet, but it needs connected to download the updates.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Do a Malwarebytes scan, too, just to be safe.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for your help. I'll wait for your post, and then I'll jump right on it.
Alrighty.
Okay, thank you guys.
Perfect. Bye-bye. Thanks.
So that's one of the tricks and sometimes problems with antivirus programs is that they need to embed themselves so deep into the computer to be able to scan for viruses as they try to attack, is that sometimes the computer's built-in protection will prevent it from running or hinder it from running. And in many cases, if you try to run two of the same program, like two antivirus programs, they can argue with each other and prevent each other from working because one sees the definitions of the other and tries to stop it. But with Sophos AV, which also does some malware, and then Malwarebytes, which is all malware, that usually isn't a problem. But we've had a couple of people that are trying to run McAfee and Norton at the same time, and they both fight each other. Because they're both trying to do antivirus.
Right.
They're both trying to read every single file as it opens to scan for virus. So the other program sees the first one opening it and says, oh, this is suspicious because there's something opening this program.
Right. And before we get too far along, I do want to remind everybody that this will be the first Thursday of the month. And therefore, we will have... Rochester Googles at St. John's Thursday. It's the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. We meet there and in Briarwood, and we have a little meeting and we talk about all things Google, whatever anybody wants to talk about. We'll be glad to chit-chat in the Briarwood building at St. John Meadows, 7 p.m.,
At St. John Fisher?
At St. John Meadows. At St. John's Meadows, which is the on one John Arbor Drive off of South Highland. And we'll be there every first Thursday. And South Clinton, off South Clinton. And we'll be there first Thursday of every month. Number one John Arbor Drive. And... we're happy to have anybody. St. John's Meadows is an assisted care facility place, and they have lots of meeting rooms. And mm-hmm. many of our members are from there, so we meet there first Thursday of every month.
And Tuesday the 4th, first Tuesday of the month, is the App Rochester meeting. If you're interested in writing an app, either Android or iOS. They're meeting at the RIT Center for Student Innovation. That's that circular built all glass building in the middle of RIT.
Yep. And
that's also, that's at 6 o'clock.
We don't know what we're going to talk about, but we'll find something.
Yeah. There's always something to talk about.
It's always something to talk about. But you'll like that. It's Rochester Google, St. John's Meadow in the Briarwood, building, I guess, is the way that works. And if you go to the Soundbites webpage, right across the top, there's a bunch of menu choices, and one of them is Rochester Area User Groups. And we're at the bottom right now, and it just says, there it is, first Thursday of every month, St. John's Meadow, 7 p.m. in Briarwood. I guess it's just in Briarwood, not necessarily the Briarwood building. But there
you just got to watch it, though, by RIT, especially if you're going to evenings right now with all the deer. I almost had a new I almost had a new hood ornament
for my
van this past week because of going down along by RIT, and they just come darting out from the campus. It's like, whoa, slow down, because
I saw a mother and fawn the other day grazing at the side of the road, so I slowed down anyway in case they decide to cross the road.
Well, I know it's getting bad when I can sit out on my front porch. I live on Empire. I look down the street, maybe, half a block or so? Strolling across the street are two does.
Yep.
And they're going up on the lawn. I'm thinking, this is all residential.
Yeah,
it is getting really crowded.
St. John's Meadows is near the intersection of South Clinton and Elmwood. And you can get in through from Elmwood Avenue, actually, easier. So, but because it's near Pinnacle Hill and Cobbs Hill, there are a lot of deer in that area.
Yeah.
I see them on my way home, and you do want to be careful in that area, absolutely. But yeah, it's a nice place and nice stuff, and you should come and join us. 7 o'clock, September 6th. At 7 p.m. in St. John Meadows in the Briarwood building. So just follow the signs.
And that's us as in Rochester Googles, not us as in Jazz
91. Right.
Too many hats around here, yeah.
Yeah, too many hats. This is the Rochester Googles group of which I am a part. So, yeah, come and join us. Bring your Google questions. We answer pretty much any question, but we prefer you keep it at least nominally something about Google somewhere along the line there. But yeah, so that's, I don't know what I've been doing wrong here today. All right, there we go. But yeah, so come and join us there. It's a pretty cool group of people. We're pretty happy with the people who show up so come and join us there. In the meantime, I suppose
The following week, September 12th, is the date of Apple's announcement. So we're going to have big announcements at the Apple Cider meeting.
Yep.
We're also having Greg Moens, who is from Vuzix Corporation. He's going to be showing off their AR glasses, which are a local Rochester company here. So
Vuzix, nice people.
Very nice people there. So
good stuff.
Yeah, AR and VR is getting to be real hot these days. And
can't hear you.
Brian from Pavilion.
All right, let's give this a try. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. Hiya, Brian. What's up?
Gentlemen.
It works.
It works.
I actually, Nick, a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, you had said that you were having trouble with distortion in some of your uploads for your WordPress.
Yeah.
Your graphics there. Did you ever repair that, or...?
No, well, as you can see on the site, on the Soundbite site, what I've done is I'm not okay. So let me go back a little bit. It costs a lot of money to run a website, what with storage fee, because we put up all the old shows and et cetera, and a lot of people download the show during the week, so it costs us a lot of money. For storage and bandwidth and everything else. And so I had ads up there hoping to recoup some of that money, and I have not been because everybody blocks ads. So I put up an underwrite this site thing so people could, you know, just donate some money. And that's garnered a couple of bucks here and there, which is very nice, so thank you. But basically, I haven't figured out WordPress yet, and I've been able to put it up, but it's not really integrated into the page. If you go there, you can see that sometimes it looks right, sometimes it doesn't look right. Depends on what device you're looking at. It's just a pain in the neck, and I got to figure it out, but I haven't yet. I've had other things that I needed to do, so I did those things. But yes, I absolutely I need to figure that out, and I need to make it work, and I haven't quite gotten that done yet.
And guess what? There's a Rochester WordPress meetup. There's a Rochester WordPress meetup on the 13th.
No, actually, I was going to offer. I kind of gave up on WordPress myself for several of my domains, and I was going to kind of maybe guru the gurus.
Yeah.
With that problem, what I found works much better is just to export pages out of your compiler and then upload them. Don't use the system within any of the compilers to upload the pages.
Yeah.
So export to like FileZilla. And then just drag and drop them as opposed to letting your whatever assembler you're using build them. It always works better that way.
Right. And I'm in general, I build all my own sites. I don't use anything like WordPress. But with Soundbites, because, you know, there's all this other stuff that we do, and Steve does a lot of the work, and it's not just me in the background. So I do a lot of that nonsense, and rather than rebuild all of that stuff from scratch, I just used WordPress to do it.
Gotcha. That's cool. I just thought maybe because I kind of bailed on those guys. I did used to wrestle with formatting and things like that, you know, across devices as well.
Right, and that's the thing I've always felt about WordPress. If you fit into their mold, it's an amazing product.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you don't fit into their mold, forget it. You cannot force it with a hammer.
Yep, absolutely. I actually wanted to tell you, too, a couple months ago, or maybe a couple weeks ago, you had done a long-winded no over something. I forget what the topic was.
Yeah, it could be anything, knowing me.
Oh, that absolutely flipped my dog out. I was listening to it off the archive, and I... My dog was in the garage with me, and he went and hid in the corner. Like, what did I do?
What's your dog's name?
We know how to punish dogs now.
Right. What's your dog's name?
Well, great show as usual, guys. I am a stout contributor, but I just
thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. We appreciate that very much.
Right, I just want to see if maybe you could fix that formatting for someone else who want to pile on too. So.
Right. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Okay, man. Well, great. Take care, guys.
Have fun. I have to admit, like I said, if you use WordPress regularly and what you're doing fits well into their model, works great. But
of course,
when you're trying to do something a little unusual,
outside the box,
a little outside their box,
and you're used to coding stuff yourself,
It does get a little bit difficult, and I just haven't spent the time to delve into it to drag myself through the muck and mire of WordPress.
Challenging for you.
See, this is what this is supposed to look like, and it looks fine on that page, and then when I come here, it looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same code. It is exactly the same code. And I just don't get it. It's who knows. But at any rate, there you are. And I should probably...
What, going from one page to the other, you mean?
No, from one site to another. On the sites that I wrote,
mm-hmm.
that I created,
okay.
when you look at that under write this site thing,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, it doesn't even look right on Ask Nick, so I don't know what I did. It's all supposed to be the same code. It looks fine on Maker's Exchange. Doesn't look right on Ask Nick. It doesn't look right on Soundbites.
Probably something very simple.
It looks right,
you know,
on Security Tango. That's the way it's supposed to look. So I don't know what it is, and it's something to do with CSS, because this is all being done under CSS, and somewhere there's a conflict, and I don't know where that conflict is. I can find it on the stuff I wrote, but finding it on the stuff in WordPress is hard. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enner.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites. 13 Democratic members of Congress on Friday asked the Federal Trade Commission to investigate Verizon's recent throttling of the Santa Clara County Fire Department while it was fighting California's largest ever wildfire. This is a terrible story.
Yeah, it is.
Throttling directly violates core net neutrality principles. Of course, net neutrality was killed. The letter led by U.S. Rep. Anna Esch, who said, in light of the repeal of net neutrality, we urge you to investigate whether Verizon's practices were unfair or deceptive pursuant to Section 5 of the Federal Trade Commission Act. The letter was sent to FTC Chairman Joseph Simons. The House members wrote to the FTC instead of the Federal Communications Commission because the latter agency ceded regulatory authority to the FTC when it deregulated broadband and eliminated net neutrality rules. The FTC doesn't enforce any rule against throttling, but it can sue companies when they deceive consumers about the terms of their service. It is unacceptable for communications providers to deceive their customers, the Democrats wrote. But when the consumer in question is a government entity tasked with fire and emergency services, we can't afford to wait a moment longer. The FTC must investigate whether Verizon and other communications companies are being unfair or deceptive in the services they're offering to public safety entities, and if so, to determine what remedies are appropriate to ensure first responders have adequate service when lives are on the line. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai has claimed that the FTC will protect consumers from unfair practices now that the FCC has completely given up its ability to regulate ISPs as common carriers. But the FTC has faced a long, difficult process in trying to punish AT&T for throttling internet service on unlimited data plans. The FTC sued AT&T over the practice in 2014, but AT&T avoided a trial by claiming the FTC had no authority over AT&T's business. A crucial device used by the Santa Clara Fire Department had an unlimited data plan that was throttled to an unusable 1/200th of their 1/200th of their normal speed after 25 gigs of usage each month. The throttling came to light in a filing made by Santa Clara in the lawsuit that seeks to restore net neutrality rules. The device was throttled at disaster responses in December 2017 and in June of this year, leading to some frantic conversations between Verizon and the department. Emails submitted in court show that fire department officials thought they had worked out a solution with Verizon to remove throttling after similar instances in December and June. They were caught by surprise when the device was throttled again in July while fighting the Mendocino Complex fire. Verizon acknowledged that it made a mistake in how we communicated with our customer about the terms of its plan. Verizon also said it failed to follow its own policy of removing data speed restrictions when contacted in emergency situations. Verizon also apologized at a hearing held by the California State Legislature on Friday. On the same day, the company said it had temporarily stopped throttling the data of firefighters and other first responders on the West Coast and in Hawaii and will soon introduce a new unlimited plan, which will cost more, with no caps and with priority access for first responders. So basically, the idea is this. They had devices. Yeah, exactly. They had devices in an emergency vehicle that kept in communication with firefighters and other vehicles over wireless, over the phone lines.
Yeah,
which works fine at Verizon's touted speed. You know, they're always saying we're the fastest, we're the best, got the best coverage. It's all about Verizon. Get Verizon. Well. Let's say that's running at 25 gigabytes in speed, right? And then they throttle that not down to 1%, but 0.5%. Not just 1% of the normal speed, but half of that. So they were down to turtle speed. And consequently, people didn't get information they needed. Vehicles couldn't keep coordinated in the fire, and people died.
Yeah.
It's not just that it happened. It's that they actually made contact with Verizon, and Verizon said, no problem, we will fix it. And they didn't.
And
they said,
we'll
remove the throttling, and they did not remove the throttling.
Oh, our bad.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying now. Oh, yeah, we kind of made a mistake.
People died, folks.
People died, and more people could have died. And
because they're just worried about the bottom line.
That's only about the bottom line.
Corporate greed.
Yep. And you got to think their usage is a massive curve. Most of the time, they're hardly using anything.
Yeah.
Right.
But then there's a fire, and they use everything.
Right.
How would they feel though if it was their house that was going to be burnt down?
Yep.
Because their homes were right in the middle of that fire spot.
Right.
I guarantee you, the executives would be singing a whole different tune if it was their loved ones and everything else that was being affected by that fire.
Right. Right. And of course, that's sort of deceptive thing. They talk about unlimited data. Yes. All of the data plans. All of the carriers have unlimited data plans. All of them throttle. That is to say, when you use a certain amount of data, it's unlimited until you actually use it.
It's unlimited, but you can be throttled or gouged. Take your pick.
Right, exactly. So when they use 25 gigs of a month, then they slow you way down because they don't want you using the data you're paying for. They don't. I had unlimited data for the longest time, and then they said, I'm sorry, we're dropping that plan entirely. Why? well, it costs us too much money. Well, you're the ones that set the price.
Yeah.
Don't blame me.
Because you messed up.
Right.
I think one of the things, if I'm remembering my history right, that started with the iPhone. And one of the things that Apple was able to talk to Singular at the time, before AT&T bought them, was we're a small company. It's our first phone. We've never gotten to phones before. If everything fails, then it's not going to hurt you very much because you're a giant company. Everyone loved the iPhone. Everyone loved the unlimited data plan. So then the other companies had to match that unlimited plan to try to woo their customers back.
Right.
And I think I remember reading the president of Singular and later the president of AT&T said that was the worst mistake we ever made.
Yep.
Well, they're still trying. I mean, there's still the big fight in many states have filed suit to get neutrality back.
Right. Right.
And have created their own state level models instead of using federal level.
California has done so.
Yeah.
So now, particularly when a big impetus was this fire.
Yep.
When suddenly you can say, I'm sorry, you can't have the data you think you can have because it puts too much strain on our network.
No, it's costing them a little bit more in their corporate, the shareholders will, get ticked off because they're not getting their check.
Right. The choice is either upgrade our service or stop you from using our service.
We have talked about this countless times, and it still boggles my mind that, and we've said that you can go to third world countries, get far more data for a lot less.
Yep.
And they're still making money.
They're making a lot of money. And part of the reason, of course, is that they have newer equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And it would actually cost money for these people to put in newer equipment. Well, that's one of the ways that somebody like Greenlight wins.
Yeah, you gotta spend it to get it.
They're putting in state-of-the-art equipment, and because they have no legacy equipment that they have to replace, that they haven't made their money back on yet, or they haven't made enough money back on yet.
They haven't depreciated it.
Right. So when they put something in, they know it's the latest and greatest, and therefore you get better speed and et cetera, et cetera. But when, some of the hardware that's out there, some of the phone lines and stuff like that, are 20 years old. Some of it's 50 years old. So
and they're going through in sometimes 150-year-old piping.
Right. Excuse me.
Hairball?
The allergies are horrible, and right now it's all just stuck in my throat because I got excited and started talking.
So a lot of the companies that are trying to string new wire, fiber optic,
yep.
And new equipment, they try to do it underground so it's not such an eyesore. But then that means that then they have to dig up the ground across everyone's lawns. We had a customer once that lived on a corner and wouldn't let the cable company dig up her lawn to run wire to the rest of her street. So nobody else on her street could get cable.
Right, right.
But she had it because it got to her house.
Right. But it's an issue all the way around. Right of way is a real problem. That's why a lot of places are putting in mesh networks. It's mm-hmm. why a lot of places have... and that's just lots and lots of little radios on lots and lots of little poles that all talk to each other and make a network.
And that's all the 5G cellular is going to be like that. It's shorter range, but higher power.
Right.
So you need a lot more, in essence, cell towers. So there's going to be a lot more coverage needed.
And it'll be a lot more expensive. Right. Because they have to have a lot more radios. But... that sort of thing is fairly new, and we won't be seeing the benefits or fallout from that for a long time. All right, that's it. Beg your pardon, I really do. It just suddenly the allergies hit. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank you for tuning in these last 2 hours. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You've been listening to Soundbites right here in the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you because we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go away because here comes George, and we will be back to talk to you in just 166 hours.